I'm hitting record. Glad you're all here, Work. Welcome to the 9th of December 2020 Aries B call. We remind you of the Hyperledger Code of Conduct and the antitrust policy. Let's all be excellent to each other and avoid encumbering our work with legal problems. The link is in the chat. I will add it again for the agenda. If you would like to add yourself to the attendees list or make any adjustments as necessary, you are welcome to do so. Is there anyone new here today that has not attended before and would like to introduce themselves?
Who's this Daniel Bloom guy that's here?
Good spot. Welcome back, Daniel. Would you like to say hello?
Sure, yeah. So I was here for a while, and then I wasn't, and now I'm back again. Is the very condensed version. So yeah, glad to be back.
And corks popped everywhere. We're glad you're back too, Daniel.
Thanks.
Awesome. Any announcements? I'm unaware of any. All right.
Took a minute to get to the chat. The IIW proceedings for this last conference session are available online.
Oh, fantastic.
I'll find a link and I can put it up there if you'd like.
Hey, thanks, Steve. That's great. It was a good one. All right, related meetings review. I will start off by offering for the DIF to DIDCOM working group. One of the next items for discussion, we've talked about a little bit already, is how what types of DIDs DIDCOM is will be able to support out of the box, meaning if you have a DID method which will reveal a key but cannot reveal an endpoint, what sorts of features within DIDCOM v2 should support that sort of a thing. That will be under discussion this next Monday, along with other topics. So that's going along well. There's also a didcom.org. If you go there, you get some quick boilerplate content that will expand into other things as we move forward. But that's been a long time coming in an effort that started in this community and has now translated there and actually made some progress. So that's pretty cool. That's that. This is the off week, right, Steve, for the implementers call? Or not Steve. Yes, Steve, for the implementers call.
Yes, this is the off week. Last week, there's a note in the meetings. We had a great presentation about coupling SSI technologies with WebAuthn. So if you'd like to go here on some of that research, follow the link. But this is our off week, and we'll meet again next week.
I'll hit the two indie meetings just so people are aware of them. Last meeting, we had a really good discussion and made progress on an idea for cross-registering networks that would work both in the indie world, but would also work across other DID methods. So we're kind of separating out the idea of the mechanism from the detail of how it would, from the method specific component of it. Not crucial that it work everywhere, but the mechanism actually would work everywhere. So it's kind of interesting. Next week, we'll be talking about, we'll have a second discussion around NIMS and ATRIBS, which are transactions on an indie ledger, and DIDs and DID docs. On the contributors call, we talked about releases. And we are realizing that we really need to double down on the work we're doing on and focus on the CI/CD issues within Indy and get those resolved. So people like Kevin is doing stellar work there. Wade is helping out, and we are trying to get more help in that so that we can free the code and make it so that we can make changes and have them come out the other side of the pipeline quickly and easily.
Very cool. Did we hit all of our meetings?
If anyone has CI/CD experience and would like to help with that, we would love to have your help.
Awesome. Thank you for those reports. No, you're good. So any other related meetings? All right. Let's run through work updates. Aries Protocol Test Suite. Is Keith here? I don't see Keith. Aries Agent Test Harness.
We just, on the Acapug call, we demoed the visualization of testing results. So we're now running daily execution, and now we've got a website that people can go to see the results of them, see what tests are passing, what changes have happened, and things like that. And then, as I mentioned last week, starting to work on Aries Framework Go back channel. So I'll wouldn't mind doing a quick demo probably next week for maybe, you know, 5 minutes on that visualization, the dashboard, results dashboard, and show what's running.
I was just thinking that. Let's plan that for next week.
Okay.
Aries Shared Libraries. I saw Andrew updating the notes. Anything you want to report?
Yeah, various updates. I've just been working on the prototype within ACAPI, which has led to some fixes in each of those components, published new crates, except for the OSCAR one, because I'm waiting on a new release for the SQLX library. But within ACAPI now, we've got the Alice and Faber agents working and the performance demo.
Very cool.
Andrew just did a demo at the ACAPUG of everything, of, you know, an indie SDK-less demo of ACAPI, and basically the Alice Faber demo working exactly the same as it works in every other environment, but we're not using the indie SDK at all, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's one of those demos where you want everything to be identical and still to work.
Yeah. Nothing new, nothing to see.
You'll notice nothing changed. That was hard.
Yeah. Next, we'll be running the test harness test suite. So I'm excited for that.
Very cool.
And there was one technical update yesterday, was adding a new type of WQL filter so we can get rid of the marker tags. So there's roughly half as many tags for each stored credential.
Awesome. Excellent. Aries Cloud is to Python.
Release 060 will be the next one, so I'll update the notes here. There's a couple of breaking changes around BitExchange and some of the work around what Andrew's doing with Askar. It's mostly internal, but there is a bit of external adjustment. Lots of things going on in the community. Persistent queues being worked on by Kiva and a person contributing there. The multi-tenant support continues with SICPA and collaborators and Animo and Ian from our team. Mediator support. We had a PR this morning from some guy named Daniel Bloom that adds part of the mediator support from Indicio. So we're really excited about that. That got merged today, and there's more coming there. And then continuing on discussions of getting this W3 verifiable credential support in both the into the protocols with the JSON LD, and then adding on the BBS plus. So all of that continues.
Very cool. Yes. So the mediator support piece adds the, or updates the protocol support for the mediator coordination to ACAPI. There's an upcoming piece that will let ACAPI itself use a mediator to be the client part of that mediation.
Right.
So that, and that's not in yet, but come on, which is cool that you could actually stick an ACAPI instance behind a firewall using a mediator on the outside in order to, and still have that work. That's the practical effect of being a client there. Cool. Aries Framework Go.
Sure. So version 0.1.5 has been tagged. The highlights were really about getting encrypted storage capabilities. So the framework now has the capability to store to the encrypted data vault, which is in is the spec being worked on in the diff working groups. We've also added support for a remote KMS. So these two things work together to allow you to have things like a web wallet where you can still switch browsers, but where the server doesn't get to see your contents. So these two features are very cool. We've also added BBS Plus verifiable credentials, and it includes the selective disclosures into this release. Right at the last minute, the selective disclosure piece got finished, so that was good. And there's also support, built-in support for the DIDWeb resolution. DIDWeb, of course, is one of the easier ways to publish a DID. So you can start using the framework with basically this easy to use DID. That is all.
Cool. Is Ruby SDK Jack? I don't think I see Jack today. I will mention we have some upcoming stuff to the toolbox to match the mediation, as well as some of those I demoed previously, and some other updates just to come current with the newer version. And so there's ongoing work there. Other framework and project updates. All right, I appreciate all the work that everyone is doing. It's fantastic to have examples and progress being made in the community and adopting new things. It's really awesome. On our schedule today, it looks relatively simple, but we will have lots of discussion. There are two things. One is a PR 571 about MIME types. It looks like Daniel Hardman is not here, but we'll attempt to have that conversation anyway for the goodness there. And then Stephen Curran is prepared to continue our conversation about AIP next, with some discussions of what's going on, what we should include it and why, et cetera. And so that's what is on the agenda. Are there any adjustments needed before we get going? All right. So this RFC, the reason I bring this up is because it affects the AIP profiles, but also has some questions about how this actually should apply now. So to cover the content real quick, this is this changes the specification of the MIME types involved with the encryption envelope. There's a couple of RFCs that are actually touched here. And so this update or this PR updates several of them. But the idea is that if we do MIME types carefully now, then I think that can have a pretty good effect on migrating to DIDCOM V2 when it comes. And so you'll notice that the inclusions here are the inclusion of like a V1 and some discussion of being able to tell the differences here. So these are fairly lightweight changes in this case, but the practical effect is that, and there's a new brand new section about detecting DIDCOM versions. The question then is this something that we can just do, or do we actually need to manage with a community coordinated update for this? And so Daniel proposed that we talk about this in our conversation today. Oh, I was speaking his name and he came. Daniel, you're here. I was just talking about the 571 PR about the MIME type updates. The idea here is that we ask and talk about this in the community about whether changing these MIME types in preparation actually needs to be something that we do from a coordinated effort, or whether we can just incorporate it into our various projects according to our schedules. The question, I believe, is, are any projects actively using the MIME type of the received messages for internal processing?
Right. I don't know of any, but I know that Condatus was looking into using MIME types. They brought this topic to an IIW and had a conversation about it. And I think Keith Smith, are you on here?
Keith is not on today, unfortunately.
I think Keith mentioned that he had done something about it, but my impression is that what's recommended in this would not break either of them. But I guess we should confirm that with them. I only have a light familiarity with what they were doing. So,
right. So I believe that you added a bunch of language, and I just covered this briefly. But when it gets down to actually talking about the content here, are these different than what we talked about before?
Well, that table shows on the left the thing in DIDCOM V1 and on the right the thing in DIDCOM V2.
Right.
So okay. DIDCOM V1 is what would matter to this community right now. And this has been proposed for a long time. None of these values in the V1 column are changes. But what's maybe possibly going to trip up Keith or Candatus is there is a predecessor to the Aries RFC that was an indie hype that had different values in it. So if they implemented MIME types way early and started depending on them when it was an indie hype, they would have to update to what the Aries RFC has said for a year now, instead of before they would be compatible with V1.
Right. Andrew, your hand is up.
Oops, there we go. Sorry, I'm not sure if this overlaps with the MIME type update or not, but I was looking at the out of band RFC where it talks about URL shortening, and it mentions that I think the shortened URL should present a web page if it's loaded in a browser, which suggests it should respond to the MIME type, but there is no MIME type defined for an agent to use when it's trying to resolve the shortened URL.
I believe those are similar but orthogonal concerns. When a message in the out of band is encoded in its URL form, right? That is the expected behavior. But for a message to arrive at an endpoint, let's say it comes in over HTTP and comes with the declared MIME type of something that could be used to inspect it and determine what type of thing you actually have, right? Right now, that may not be super useful because the only thing we're transferring back and forth are V1 messages, but in the future, receiving of V2 messages, then we'd be able to use the MIME type to differentiate between them. So though they're both dealing with MIME types, I believe the difference there is that one is, the message may not be received. It's in URL form and may not be received directly into an agent. And the other one, in fact, is being received directly into an agent. We're trying to tell what it is.
I should also point out that I don't think Akapai sends or receives these MIME types in V1.
I think that's mostly the behavior of all of the agents. We sort of declared them and then we didn't do anything about it. And I think if we do decide, and this is Steven's conversation, but if we do decide to include this in the interoperability profile, it would prepare us for, it's sort of like a community coordinated update, only we're not calling it that, in order to prepare us for receiving messages in the V2 format that will be coming up this next year. So I believe, Andrew, that your statement that the software is not doing anything about it is maybe almost universally true among projects. Some may be doing it, but I don't think it's something we've leaned on as a community very heavily, mostly just because there hasn't been another thing we've been sending or receiving.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Evernim doesn't do anything with MIME types either. But it shouldn't be too hard to just add a MIME type. In most cases, I'm hoping it's just, you know, a handful of lines of code somewhere.
Yeah, it feels very light.
Akapai does use a specific MIME type, but it's not that one. It's the older.
Is it the indie one?
Yeah.
But it probably, does it detect anything on the way in the door, or does it just send it out when it's sending?
I think it responds especially to application JSON, but otherwise it tries to auto detect.
It just accepts it. Yep.
So there is a section of this where I say something like what it means to support this RFC. Did you already look at that?
I didn't. Do you know where it is?
I think it's farther down towards the bottom. I think you just scrolled past it.
Right here.
What it means to implement this RFC. So this would be the thing that we would be asking agents to sign up for if we put this into the AIP. If you see the MIME type for a DIDCOM V1 message, that you would understand that it means DIDCOM V1. That's bullet point one. And bullet point two is if you emit a MIME type and you're using V1 messages, that the MIME type should be the V1 MIME type.
Yeah.
So I don't think either of those feels too difficult, but I agree it's probably net new work for everybody or almost everybody.
But also fairly non-destructive, and that will come up, I'm sure, as we have further conversations about this. So given that, is that the conversation, Daniel, that you had hoped to have?
Yeah, and you know, it's my proposal that we do this, but merging the PR shouldn't be contingent on my proposal, because there's nothing about the proposal that's inherently tied to the AIP thing. We could choose to put it in a different AIP instead.
Well, so yeah, you're correctly bringing up the fact that the PR isn't about the AIP. It mostly adds clarifying factors in terms of the you know, making clear the advantage of you know, detecting version one versus version two. This is really an awareness of version two update, not really right. An AIP focused one.
Right. So yeah, the only thing about the AIP is just it's with the data in the RFC as it is, it's now possible to crisply say this is what it would mean if we adopted it into an AIP, and then we can decide whether we want to do that as a separate question.
Right. So openly asked, is anyone opposed to the update of this or merging this this PR, which updates the MIME types in the discussions as we talked about? Is anyone opposed? All right, I think that means we merge it. And that leads, Stephen, onto your discussion.
All right, let me share my screen. Back to this. This is a revised version of last week's presentation. And sort of thought we'd go the same structure, but more discussion. So last week I asked people to sort of hold back and not let me get through things. And we had a voting session early on. So this time it's sort of go through it, but let's have the discussion on it. So I've got a few things in here. Whoops. Okay. I added the votes. And so you can see all the votes. We want to continue to support the things in AIP 1.0. So I think, you know, not a lot of controversy there. We want to reuse connections and all that that implies, which basically means out of band at least, did exchange likely. I liked framing it in including the phrase enable interoperability with Aries Framework Go. There was questions on that piece of it and whether we should leave that in. Thoughts?
I think that the goal is that we have a target which both we and Aries Framework Go can hit. I think that wording it like this makes it feel like the entire purpose of this is to align all of us with Framework Go, which is not really the point.
Okay.
I'm fine with framing it this way, but I agree with what Sam just said.
Yeah.
But it doesn't matter that much. It's the right goal. So
Yeah, I like the framing because I was thinking, it's funny, as I was highlighting this, I was thinking the same thing. It's not really to say, oh, we all want to match for Aries Go. We want to align with Aries Go, which may mean changes in both sides and so on. So, yeah, I like the wording.
Yeah, identifying a common target that we can both hit.
Much more interesting. So this is the first one where we had some comments and or at least some votes to say no, this shouldn't be a goal. So basically, we've got mobile agents to a certain level. It would be nice to have things that I personally think it would be good to have additional information that mobile agents could use to allow the user experience to be better. I'm really concerned with the progress we're making in mobile agents, that is ultimately going to be, what humans use for this. And I think we need more information in those. So making improvements in that area would be a good thing. So that's kind of where it came from initially. And then, of course, there's a couple of RFCs related to this.
So I may have been a no vote. And the reason I voted no is because I felt like, in general, this was kind of a good idea, but it felt like there were like implications to this that I was unsure about. And that's why I think I voted no. I like the goal, but I'm nervous that by accepting the goal, I accept all the implications, which is probably not true.
Ultimately what an AIP is a set of RFCs on a particular version of that RFC. So these goals allow us to evaluate whether a particular RFC should be included and what version, what specific commit to that RFC should be included. And that's really how these manifest in AIP changes.
So your reason for proposing these goals is that when it comes to evaluating the RFCs and versions, we frame them up against this to decide whether they ought to be included or not, is what you're saying.
Exactly. So I think I worded it last week that I find this a back and forth yin and yang thing. You pick some things you'd like to see, then you pick some RFCs that match those things, and then you come back and say, well, I'd also like these RFCs, so how can I rationalize that? And back and forth. So,
okay. I'm much more comforted given that additional explanation.
Sorry. So this is George. So so maybe I missed it. What is actionable information? What does that mean?
An example might be, there's a message protocol that's been proposed that we really have done very little on. It says, hey, I revoked your credential. I'm an issuer. I issued you a credential a while ago. And by the way, I just revoked it. So that would be information that a mobile agent could use to say, flag a credential in a wallet that has been revoked, or might even prompt the person to say, hey, this has been revoked. Do you want to remove this from your wallet? Or other sort of things. So that's what's intended by the idea of actionable information. And so there's a couple of RFCs that are in there that are tied to that, or that provide that.
So I feel like two things. Thing one is, this isn't as high a priority, and I was one of the no votes, and it wasn't because I didn't think this was nice to have. It's not at the same level as the must-have stuff, and I don't want to hold the must-have hostage to the nice-to-have. So that was part of my no vote. The other thing is, I think the interoperability consequences of the RFCs you're talking about are actually quite low. If let's say Akapai sends a message to a mobile agent that hasn't implemented this particular thing, the mobile agent is going to ignore it, which is no different from a mobile agent that has implemented it but decided not to prompt the user.
Interesting.
I don't know that it really changes the interop that much in that kind of a protocol. So that was the two things I was thinking when I voted no.
That's an interesting way to think of all the changes, which is, how does this affect interop? Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, it does have some effect. I'm not saying there's zero. I'm just saying that it's a weakened or diminished consequence because it's not a very tightly interactive type of a thing we're trying to facilitate here anyway. We're just saying it'd be great if information would flow, but the other party doesn't actually know whether it flowed or not anyway, so. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. Any further discussion on this one? Any other comments? Okay. I called out specifically credential revocation and independent, somewhat independent. In fact, it turned out I actually had used one that was, I've only got two suggestions on that, one of which is an indie specific one, and one is that idea of notifying them that revocation has been done. So this one is not, you know, sort of low on the priority for those of us doing indie credentials. I think the PR that's been submitted that talks about indie present proof best practices should be paid attention to. And I would kind of like to see everyone sort of acknowledge, yep, that's what we want to do. But it is not very independent of the revocation mechanisms. There's not that much to talk about on this one. Just leave a space for anyone who wants to say anything.
Yay, revocation.
Okay, I want to do it. This was a clear win. So there's a few and a couple more coming that improve the low-level messaging and enable transition. The conversation we just had previously is now reflected in this presentation and includes reference to that PR that Daniel was just talking about. There's a few other ones in here, and so we'll talk about those when we get there, I think, but general agreement that we want this. Brief break for anyone to say anything. All right.
Yay!
I added the line on this one. There was general idea that sure, mediators would be fine, but it's not really that important if you don't do a mediator, and I don't wanna have to implement a mediator if I don't support mediation. So I proposed adding that line in green, and that if you want to support mediators and claim support for that, mediators that can be used interoperably, then we support those protocols.
I was a no vote on this one too, because Evernim doesn't support the interoperable mediator configuration stuff. I think in the long run, we would like to. We don't have any opposition to it, but it's not a very high priority for us because moving from Evernim's mediator to somebody else's mediator, the higher priority thing that I really want to solve is like the wallet export stuff. So this is kind of a second tier priority, and it doesn't feel like this is the right time to say thou shalt do this or you're not interoperable.
But again, then you just say, well, we don't support interoperable mediation, which is fine.
Well, but that term bothers me. We do support a mediator that's interacting in an interoperable interaction. The thing that we're trying to standardize here is actually the backroom operations between an agent and its own mediator to arrange stuff, which isn't interoperable in the first place. So the only thing that we're talking about is swapping out mediators, not mediators behaving in their normal mode of enabling interoperable routing.
Yeah, I second that. There's a difference between supporting the ability to forward messages the way mediators need,
yeah,
right? and doing the actual coordination. And there's points where it's just not applicable. And in Evernim's case, and there's others in the community as well, that ship both a mobile agent with sort of baked in mediator support that have no need of doing this. There's no decrease in interoperability. It just means that those products need to be used as a unit, but that's like the only option that makes sense for what they're doing. So I'm nervous about the language here, because not because of what it will require of us, but because what people might misunderstand it to mean if they're reading this.
Okay.
My other question is that I wonder if there's a smaller, more niche way that we can do this. Number one, I believe, based on what I've observed in the community, that this is like an in-demand thing and that it doesn't necessarily need special attention to promote it. Meaning people that are building agents separate from mediators and people that are building mediators separate from agents are naturally doing this anyway. And so I think that, I don't know that it needs a special attention that an AIP provides. What it might be nice to do, and I think that what we could just do in products is to say, this supports, you know, for example, if you ship a mobile agent or a mediator that supports this protocol, you can say, we support RFC whatever, and that's enough. That way you know that if you're trying to pair products together, as long as they support that RFC, that it will, that's probably good enough to bind that together. So most of my concern is about the perception of people that don't really understand this very well, not necessarily the language that those of us that are more in the know see.
So this is Troy. I fully support including mediator and mediator coordination in AIP. I think it's a great benefit between the projects that we can claim to support the same target. If it's just about wording, then maybe we can talk about wording.
I'm
very hesitant about the idea that something that's in demand isn't in the AIP.
Exactly. That's where I am as well. It is interoperable in that an arbitrary agent can connect with an arbitrary mediator that implements those protocols. That's interoperability.
Yes.
Yeah, but outside the scope of DIDCOM, in a sense, because DIDCOM purports to solve the problem of how agents can talk to one another outside or across the sovereign domain boundaries. And what we're talking about here is interoperability inside a sovereign domain, which is really nobody's business. Now, it's a virtuous thing. I'm glad that we are thinking about it. And like I say, Everton would be happy to adopt this, but it feels like we're conflating we're using interoperability to mean two different things. I thought interoperability was about cross vendor support.
It is in this case.
Wallet, I want to use my wallet with somebody else's mediator. I don't want to use it with the one, you know, I just want to be able to use a wallet that I download and I can connect to a mediator that's available. Isn't that interoperability? I can make a choice on which mediator I'm using.
Does anybody out there really offer the feature that you're talking about?
we're about to.
Yeah.
And what I mean specifically is that we don't want to be in it's useful for interoperable projects that don't contain both sides, meaning both the mobile app and the mediator support, which is a lot of them actually. And so we don't yet have widespread pieces of that, but that's a hole that I think the ecosystem is going to fill. And I do believe it is about interoperability. What I don't want this to become, and perhaps if we can tune the wording, I do not want it to be a hammer that people beat on providers that supply both with to claim that they're not interoperable. What I worry about is that someone says, well, you're not AIP 2 compatible unless you let me use my own mediator, because I do not think that should be a requirement for AIP. But it is useful for separate vendor products or open source projects to be able to declare that they support the same target.
Right. One of my concerns is that the biggest place where there's a challenge is the business model for a wallet in the first place. And opening up this allows, for example, open source wallets, consortium wallets to come into place, but they can be used with suppliers of server side technology. And that's where I think it actually could come into play in an important way.
Does anybody who makes a wallet today have no cloud component to their wallet?
Are you speaking of organizations or open source projects?
Either.
I can comment on, you know, the web wallet we're building is, of course, using these mediator and mediator coordination RFCs. So the open source could be connected to another mediator, and I think this is a good result.
Max, Mobile Agent Xamarin supports a prior version of the RFC. I don't think it's been updated, and it's worth noting that that still works with. Akapai, even though the new one is also supported. But one of the features of having it in AIP is that it doesn't just lock it to the RFC, it actually locks it to the RFC version, which is a much more useful function for presenting an interop target.
All right, well, why don't I withdraw my objection on a condition? What if we said, to Troy's point, you know, let's tweak the language and stop calling it interoperable mediation. Let's call it interoperable mediator configuration, because that's really what you're doing here. You're configuring mediators. When I heard the language of, well, yeah, I want to be able to use a mediator. You are using mediators with other people's agents right now today, because that's the only way DIDCOM could work. This is a back-end conversation about configuring your mediator.
Right? I vote yes on that language change. Interoperable mediator configuration.
Yep.
Okay, I can vote for that.
Okay. Now, are there any other goals at this point that, and after a week of thinking, there's anything more that we should be including in this?
Yeah, I suggested feature discovery. And I also suggested support for the simplest form of peer DIDs.
So I put those down as things to be added. They're in later slides, but are those goals? Richard originally called this, his desire was to have use cases. And he first talked about this when we did AIP 1. So that's what I'm trying to put here. So I sort of put those as sort of, those are specific features we want to include. I sort of tie that to the first two would be feature discovery.
So as far as goals is, oh, sorry.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So as far as goals is concerned, I left a comment on the Google Docs, but basically saying, I think we should include as part of AIP next, the goal to start moving towards sort of like ledger agnostic protocols and standards. I know DIDCOM is already there, but I'm not sure. I know the protocols are generally there, at least, you know, when you consider V2 of presentation and credentials.
Yeah,
but I am not so sure about the formats themselves. So I would propose that we also add, we also put in scope this goal with and as a feature to enable these goals, I propose we add the support for DIFs, credential manifest, and presentation exchange formats.
Come on. I I'm gonna put a comment in here to say this is another goal we're proposing, which is the ledger agnostic protocols and standards.
And credential formats, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not opposed to that goal, but I think it needs to be made a lot more concrete. Like, what would that mean? How could we know we've achieved it?
Correct. Just like all the other points. But yeah. Yes, I agree.
The way we achieve it is we include RFCs that meet that goal. That, I mean, all we can do, you know, AIP ultimately is a list of RFC versions, right? RFCs and a specific version of it. So, but I think this basically answers the question of V1 versus V2 credential exchange.
Yes. And
carries out further to you know, the registries associated with the V2.
You keep saying V2. I'm assuming you mean AIP 1.0 and AIP 2.2.
No, I apologize. V2 credential exchange.
Oh, okay. 453
and 454.
But yes, I agree with Daniel's remark for sure. So this is, so from what I understand, Stephen said last week, this, he's just taking a temperature of the goals, and for sure we need to flesh all of these out.
So any objections to this one? As I say, it manifests in the addition of some protocols, but that's the big thing. Or some RFCs are being added. Any other new ones?
So the things that I proposed could be justified by a goal that's something along the lines of prepare for a transition to DIDCOM V2. That would justify the MIME type RFC being added, and it would justify the pure DID stuff.
I had that up here. Is that close enough?
Oh, okay. Yeah, if we use that one to do it, then that's good enough. Yeah. So we can take that one out.
Okay. All right. On to the fun. I don't think so. As I mentioned last week, I sort of divided the 1.0 RFCs. All but two have actual text changes in them. The vote is to leave these as is, leave these as part of it. These ones are really just things like we renamed message types from DID colon to HTTP colon. So we can, you know, they were just editorial changes or as a result of that message type transition. So basically, I don't think there's any controversy and we don't need to spend a lot of time on these ones. Any concerns by anybody that these are part of NFC AIP 2? And again, there are links in the associated document with this that point to the old version, the AIP 1.0 version, and the current master for all of these. So if you want to compare them, you can do that. There is also a utility that I wrote a while ago inside the repo that allows you to actually run a command and see all the diffs between the protocols.
So I see. Oh, sorry. Your question was: does anyone oppose that any of these are carried forward into AIP 2.0? Is that correct?
Yes.
Oh, okay. So yeah. So I look at this list. I don't think I have a problem. I just have a question around that unchanged remark in parentheses for wallets. What's that about?
I just meant that is the only one that literally has no change to the text. All of the rest evolved in some way since we set AIP 1.0. That one has no changes at all.
Okay.
So I don't have an objection to this conceptually, but I just want to ask as kind of a point of convention here. Do we expect that successive AIPs always include previous AIPs unless there's some deprecation issue going on?
Yep, basically. unless there's a reason not to. Go ahead. Sorry.
The alternate model would be that you say, yes, we're compatible with AIP 1.0 and we're compatible with AIP 2.0 and they're disjoint sets on purpose. So you just declare as many layers as you're compatible with, and that way you don't get fatter and fatter AIPs, but maybe that's not a bad thing. I don't know. Did we ever discuss that and make a formal conclusion?
Because with these ones, because all of these sort of changed text, I would not want to like support 003 protocols using the link to the version that was in AIP 1.0 and versus the link that is in that is going to be in AIP 2.0.
Good point.
I want those new changes to apply.
Okay.
So in this case, there really is no overlap because only this one is unchanged. So in theory, we could say we support AIP 1.0, except except for these, because this is the only one where they're both are going to point to the same commit.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Okay. These are the two that I just wanted to raise, that there's a reference to signing, and I'm assuming we're going to accept signing in the attachment, but in the attachment protocol, but I put that into the even more controversy page. So if that's accepted, then this one becomes trivial. And then encryption envelope, that could be impacted with 334, I think. So we might have to revisit this one if we do 334. But other than that, again, these I don't think are very controversial. So just as long as we're aware of that. Okay. I think we've agreed we're not going to go to 2.0 of DIDCOM.
Mean by that is that we're not going to refer to the version of DIDCOM that's under active development in the ARIES RFC as 2.0.
Right. We may add a couple of things to it, and those come later, such as what was presented earlier in the session this morning, but we're not going to go all the way over to say we're going to support, you know, JWMs and the full DIDCOM 2.0. Are we agreed on that, or is that a controversy still?
I agree, and I'll argue against it at this point. We're just not quite there yet. It will be soon, but it's not yet.
Okay. Anything else with this one that people want to raise?
Can I just ask, in terms of what you just said, we're just not there yet. Why that kind of like why that's the opinion and kind of what the timeline might be?
Yeah, so there's still some things under discussion that affect the flow and processing of V2 messages. They're not hugely massive, but they're important, right? For example, next week we're going to discuss the ability for DIDCOM V2 to support DIDs that can't contain endpoints. So the endpoint needs to be provided alongside messages, et cetera. And that it has an impact on message flow and how you're going to process, for example, inbound or outbound messages. And so I think that it still remains a moving target. It's not moving a lot, but it still remains a moving target for implementation. And that moving to it now will necessitate further moves later on, as opposed to waiting until it's, you know, it's more community accepted and people said, yes, this is the fixed thing we're targeting. And then I think it becomes a really good candidate for an AIP.
Gotcha. Thank you.
On that RFC 5, would it be okay if we put a one line change in the RFC right now that just said the body of conventions that has been developed inside Hyperledger Aries is, you know, collectively known by the umbrella term DIDCOM V1, and the one at DIF is collectively known by V2, just so that the DIDCOM stuff there is, you know, the designation of V1, V2 makes sense. I would be happy to do that even in the next 5 minutes while we're talking. Yeah. If that
I think that would be a really good idea, but don't do it in the next 5 minutes because we need your attention.
Oh, okay.
But I agree. I think that would be a good change. And of course, we just include that in the thing.
Okay.
Okay, any other comments on DIDCOM? So the basic bottom line for that is we potentially will, we potentially maybe including some other RFCs that impact DIDCOM some, but we're not going to go to 2.0. Okay. Message ID and threading, the only one that is there is goal codes, a reference to goal codes. If we're likely to include goal codes in AIP 1 or 2, then we just accept the latest version of it. If we don't, we have to think about that some more. So we can either defer the question of, you know, bumping this to the latest version of message ID and threading until we talk about goal codes, or we just say goal codes are in and we're good here.
Well, goal codes is a conceptual RFC. It's not a feature.
No. Nope. So goal codes manifest itself in DID exchange.
Yes.
ID and threading. So it's not, if we're including those, then we pretty much have to use goal codes, except goal codes as well.
Okay. But what I'm trying to get at is there's not any extra work beyond the work that was already in protocol versions that we were imagining adopting. There's not any new work to adopt goal codes because it's just a concept that showed up, right?
But yes, and what I'm saying here is that that concept appears in message ID and threading. So if we go to the very latest, we're again accepting goal codes as a concept that is manifest in message ID and threading.
Okay. That seems like the protocols that we want in the AIP have them. So I think we probably want it in, which would make the latest version of RFC 8 desirable. So I vote that we put it all in together.
Yeah. Any comments or objections to that idea? We got a plus one on goal codes and on Daniel.
Troy's being nice to me.
We're putting Daniel in the AIP.
Okay. Attachments has the section of signing that was not in AIP, in the AIP 1.0 version. I think we all want that. I think we've got it. I believe
there's an implication there in that you need support for DID key.
Yep.
What do you mean by that? What do you mean?
Well, the signing uses DID key as for to express the key.
What? So if I go to the attachments RFC, is that what you're saying? And I go to the section on signing, on signed attachments, I will see text saying that I must use DID key?
That doesn't
make sense. No, hang on. So I'm not explaining this very well. It's it applies more to DID exchange and the out of band stuff than it does to attachment specifically.
DID exchange.
So DID exchange uses attachments.
Yeah. It's and more generally, I believe it's just using the attachments RFC, right? Essentially.
Yes. Except that when it's combined with out of band, you have to indicate the key that you're actually using. And the newest version of the out of band RFC says that the key must be represented in DID key format.
Oh, okay.
Well, this gets to my suggestion about DID peer a little bit. did peer is entirely synonymous with did key at its lowest level of features. So that would give you a second option if you wanted to, but it would still essentially be the same thing.
It could be, but that's not what's currently written in the RFC. The combination of what you're proposing of that would certainly have that effect. I'm sorry, I'm Englishing hard today.
I was looking at those did key what the text, the RFC text say did key references. I think we should be a little bit more precise, and I believe instead of just did key IDs, they should be did key URLs.
Does did key allow anything to be in the URL?
Yeah. What does that mean?
Okay, so you have a did URL. In this case, the did method would be key. And basically you need to refer to a key inside the did document that is resolved when you resolve this kit with this did. So this would allow code reuse, you know, when you have whatever code you have existing that resolves dids and did URLs, you would just reuse it here.
Okay. But that kind of discussion is a PR in...
Yeah. It's tangential, really, to the point.
The AIP discussion, but you're saying it's important that we get it right. So there is an RFC about did key itself. So I would be putting it in that.
Yes, but now I see that apparently we also need to come back to this did exchange and tidy it up there as well, or at least the examples.
So this is a really important, I'll do a meta comment here. This is a really important part of this, is that we're trying, you know, ultimately AIP is simply, you know, a list of RFCs and pointers to the specific versions. If we've got things in the RFCs that have to get nailed as part of this, we have to do that as PRs into the RFC, and then we point to the commit associated with that. So,
correct.
Yeah. So George, you're taking that one?
Sure.
To look into at least did exchange on that, and to see, you know, how that spreads out into any other ones.
Yep.
Excellent. Any other comments on attachments?
I'm going to save my did key one and we'll note it when we get to did exchange.
There is a did key one coming.
Yeah.
160 connection protocol. My recommendation is we deprecate it, but we don't remove it. Comments on that?
So what's the implication for those who continue not to implement connection protocol then?
Interesting.
I'm not even sure if it's in scope of this question, but I do wonder about, you know, what exactly will be the interrupt cross section, but I'll just leave it at that. Never mind.
I want to understand what you mean by deprecate here, Stephen. Are you saying that we change the status of the RFC document itself to be deprecated? Or are you saying that with respect to the AIP, it's included but discouraged in the AIP in some way?
That's what I was thinking.
It's
a new concept.
Why not both?
It could be both. Sorry, it could be both. But specifically in asking this question, I'm saying, do we keep it in the AIP but mark it as deprecated, or do we remove it from the AIP?
Okay.
My vote is for removing it from the AIP. If we're going to support did exchange, then it's confusing to leave it in but be in a deprecated state.
Yeah, I don't think that there is such a thing so far. We could certainly create it, but now, I don't think we have a construct of deprecating something, but still having it in the interoperability profile.
Yeah, it's an interesting.
So I think the idea would be, let's deprecate the document and let's drop it out of the interoperability profile. People who want to have the feature can keep it, but there's no reason to implement it just to comply more fully with the AIP.
Yep, agreed. Agreed with that, and agreed with the removing from the interop profile and deprecating the RFC itself.
Same answer for issue credential present proof?
From my end, yes, same answer.
And mine too.
I agree. We're not telling people that they can't support the prior version.
Yeah.
Right? Of issue credential, or they can't support the connection protocol, but it does mean that they do support the newer protocols.
This one had the added spin that we actually had changed the version of it, but we're not going to, if we're going to remove it, we deprecate the RFC and we remove from the AIP. And we do the same with this one. And I think this one, we do the same. Any objection to this one as well?
Well, for the ones that we're deprecating, do we know what we're going to point to instead?
Yes. All three of these, we know exactly what we're going to point to.
Okay, so I know on the 36, 37 ones, what do we point to for the 56 one?
Out of band.
Oh, okay.
The only place it was really in use was the out of band protocol, and it actually has a service attribute instead of the decorator.
Yeah,
okay, great.
Agreed.
I'll put that note in. Okay, good. Okay, progress, nice. I like all these answers, so I'm happy with these.
Sorry, quick question. For the connection protocol, what's that being replaced by?
Did exchange.
Right, okay.
So that's 23.
Cool.
Which is the craziest thing, that the new one's 23 and the old one's 160, but you know.
I know, it's my fault. I know.
I realized halfway through saying that you were going to say that. And I went, oh, I feel bad.
No, it's fine. I would rather attempt goodness and make mistakes than not attempt goodness at all.
Yeah. Okay. we've talked about a number of these. I think these are without controversy with George taking on the use did key / did exchange implications and maybe attachments as well. But I think we want all of these in. Any questions on that? The only slight concern I've got is, do we need any sort of registry of goal codes? Are we happy that the where goal codes are used, the enumerated set of goal codes is sufficient?
What do you mean by the enumerated set of goal codes is sufficient? Like, obviously, they're not enumerated in any RFC, I think, right?
I think so. There are some that are enumerated, but they kind of feel like examples as opposed to thou shalt use this.
Oh, okay, so if they're examples, then they're just that. They're examples, they're not normative. So if I were to rephrase my question would be, or my point earlier was, are they normatively enumerated somewhere?
And that's where I was thinking a registry would be useful. As I mentioned this last week, the way the DIT spec has sort of said, oh, there's a bunch of things in here that will evolve independently, and we should have a registry for them so people can add them.
So I do believe we need a normative list to really complexify the universe. I don't believe that we're going to be successful at pointing to one version of that normative list as an RFC that actually contains only the set we want, because you might have goal codes that are introduced for good reasons, but that are not very, very universal, and specifying the version of that sort of implies that it is.
Yeah.
We may need, as part of the AIP, a separate enumeration of the goal codes, even if it refers to their definition somewhere else. So in addition to the RFCs, we may need a separate enumeration of the goal codes.
Another option might be to just enumerate them in the AIP profile itself.
That's what I mean.
Oh,
but,
oh, okay.
But enumerate them, not define them. Meaning if they're defined in the normative list, perfect. But we should list the specific goal codes that are AIP included in the AIP in addition to the RFCs.
So I agree with everything that's been said, but I think we could afford not to have this problem solved when this AIP goes out. And the reason that goal codes are here is not because they're like a prime mover in our thinking. They come up in several other contexts. And as long as we've provided a coherent conceptual model where goal codes show up, we can work on making the management of those goal codes more standardized in another AIP. So we can solve the registry problem at some point in the future. That's at least what I'd prefer to do.
I think on top of that, Daniel, if we identify goal codes that we should have in common, we could actually enumerate and maybe define them in this AIP. And then we can move forward with the larger project at a future date.
Yeah, that's true.
Because I think we're going to have a relatively small set of goal codes that we want to include in the AIP.
So are we saying enumerate them in the AIP?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Enumerate the AIP specified goal codes or required goal codes in the AIP itself. And, okay. And we might do it but differently for the next AIP, right? Yeah. But for this one, given the lack of infrastructure for goal code enumeration, I think the AIP becomes a reasonable place to do it.
And the lack of experience in using it. Okay, that's interesting. All right.
I would tend to agree, yeah.
Okay.
That allows ourselves some grace in learning over time. and we're not really locking ourselves into anything because we can move on to other AIPs in the future. And abandon potentially stupid things that we came up with.
Okay. All right. Reuse connection. Are we good on this one? These four? Okay. The four items that I had under mobile UX, and so this goes to the question I think George asked when we were looking just at goals. Connection reuse, obviously, that's a huge one. It's already covered, but that's a huge one for mobile UX. It's just so painful right now. I thought please ACK, which is a decorator that somebody can add to a message, and the intention is the receiver of that message would respond with an ACK that of some meaning. And that would help some use cases so that if you got you presented a credential, you could have a notice back saying, hey, it was accepted. And the mobile agent could decide to use it or not use it. It's just that if it did use it, an agent on the other side would know how to respond to it. .183 is revocation notification. And then we never did put basic message. That got removed the last minute of AIP 1.0. Do we think 95 is of value so that one agent can send something to a mobile agent with a message in it?
Andrew's got his hand up.
Go ahead.
Oops, took myself off. I'll put myself on mute rather. Just related to out of bound, which is mentioned above there, I have a small PR in related to the URL shortening. Just to clarify the format that should be returned. I was interested if any agents are actually implementing that part of out of bound yet.
Good. Yeah, the next thing will be nailing down exactly what versions, but and that'll be the first cut of this, but that's good. I've never been particularly comfortable that we had out of band shortener nailed, and there was some question about it, but no one's really settled on it. So I definitely would like people looking at that.
Yeah, for the main part of my PR is that the RFC seems to specify that it should return, when you resolve the shortened URL, it should return the body in base64, which means if you load it up in a browser, you just get a bunch of numbers. It's more useful just to return it in JSON format so you have some discovery of the format there.
Okay.
So onto your question of basic message, I don't see the use for this. I don't see our use case for this other than what, chatting, a chat application.
Interestingly, I had a discussion today with someone who's looking for how do we put a chatbot on a on an agent for exactly this purpose. But
I'm having some conversations. There's a couple of people that came to me from I don't remember which corner of the community, but not normal Aries channels, and wanted to know about this. And I said it was time for us to write a rich chat protocol. So there will probably be a PR that gets raised at some point about doing rich chat. It will have things like the ability to react to a message, you know, give it a plus one or a thumbs up. It'll have the ability to tell somebody that the other party is typing right now, that kind of a thing. Some things that we kind of take for granted in chat type applications. But it will resemble basic message in a lot of ways underneath, for what it's worth. Evernym ignored basic message for a long time. We recently implemented it on one of our agents, but not in the mobile one, which is ironic, because the mobile one is actually where it would make more sense in for a lot of reasons. But the UX for the mobile with basic message didn't feel comfortable to us yet. So maybe we're being perfectionistic, but we never got around to it on the mobile side. But on the other side, in our enterprise agent, we can now chat. It's just ironic.
So as the author of Basic Message, I have mixed feelings. The first thing, Daniel, is I'm delighted to hear about the motivations to create a rich message. I'll explain my conflict here. One is that basic message allows the bat phone, the absolutely useful. Phil Winley wrote about this and gave it that name a long time ago when that was first demonstrated, and it's incredibly useful. However, the reason I'm nervous about including it in an AIP is that I believe there are agents for which it just doesn't make sense. So based on their role, et cetera. So I think that I would only feel comfortable including it if there were sensible language in the AIP that allowed that to be excluded by an agent and still be AIP2 compatible. That seems like a weak sauce thing, but I'm leery of requiring it of all agents. I do think I am very bullish on the fact that I think that this is one of the, I think that the ability to communicate between humans is more powerful in the broader sense than the mechanical exchange of credentials. And the reason I created it was that I didn't want there to be, I wanted to broaden people's horizons beyond the credential. And I know that that's not a universally shared opinion that I have, but anyway, there's some mixed feelings about it. I think I voted against including it in the last AIP. I could be convinced differently this time, but that's part of the problem. I think it's incredibly useful when it's implemented, but I'm nervous that someone would not be considered to be compatible because they didn't support it.
Okay. We are almost out of time. I think we've agreed these ones, RFC. So I think we still have to answer these ones. I think we're still just thinking about these. So I think we have to have one more discussion about these three. This is a duplicate. 441 is brand new and indie people should read it. I think we still need a discussion on these three. I think I just added per Troy's comment in the chat about 94, but assuming mediator is here, those three are there. Ledger agnostic protocols and standards. We'll have to think of what those would be. Certainly 453 or 454 get us part of the way there. I suspect Did Exchange gets us part of the way there. But more to think about on those. So we'll try to focus the discussion on what we haven't discussed up till now with the next time. These are the two right now that are the additions. Feature discovery, which is 557. Feature discovery 2, which is the goal codes, et cetera. And static, no update, did peer support, which needs to be an RFC if we're going to include it. So I'm not sure where that fits. So Daniel, I was going to give you the task of, is that referenced in an RFC? And if not, can you find where it is appropriate so we can include that as an RFC in here, whether that's a standalone or whether that's part of existing.
I wondered if maybe I could just add a paragraph to the use did key RFC and just say, because the kind of peer dids that I'm proposing that we support are the ones that are just essentially at feature parity with did key. And they require almost, I mean, it's almost so simple that you just take the prefix off for the one did type and put the prefix on for the other. There's no other changes needed. Maybe see, that would be enough.
That doesn't seem very useful to me because the point of did key is A, it's just a key, but it also means there's no end service endpoint. Peer did, I would absolutely expect and want to have a service endpoint for it. So
yeah,
I don't
think that's, yeah, that, okay.
I second that.
Yeah.
All right.
The desire for an endpoint to be included in what we supported initially.
Okay. I'll
and evolution of it, but obviously this initial cut will be for static did peer support. But like one of the points is that you can you can modify it over time.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'll come up with a way to figure out how to reflect that in RFC land.
Okay. So that's an action for Daniel. But I think that basically wraps up our time. So what I'll do, Sam, with your permission, is just sort of adjust this presentation to show here the decisions we've made and basically have a slide that we jump into almost from the start that covers the things that we really didn't get to resolution on, which is pretty much that plus these three.
Yes, I think this is valuable. It might be useful to, if we had a short demo or something in the beginning to break up the intensity of the conversation. But yes, I think this is absolutely worth spending time on as a community. I'm fully open to feedback of other important things we ought to be addressing. But I think that continuing this discussion would be excellent. And I'm also grateful, Stephen, for your driving this discussion and preparing for it.
Awesome. Thank you.
So more next week. Perfect.
All right.
That's awesome. Amazing. That's it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Stephen, in particular, for all of his effort along this vein. And have a great week, and we will see you all next week.
All right. Take care.
See ya.